Welcome to the podcast of Greenlight Bookstore. This is the quarantine season. While Greenlight isn't currently hosting in-person gatherings, we're still striving for ways to create connection around books. Thanks to the gracious efforts of authors and interviewers scattered across the country and the world, we've taken our events programming online, hosting live readings, conversations, and audience questions via Zoom. Our podcasts this season are a record of those intimate conversations between thinkers and creators speaking from separate rooms, and a window into the ways that ideas and stories connect us all. Once you've listened to the conversation, you can purchase the books mentioned in this podcast at Greenlight's two bookstore locations in Brooklyn or on our website at greenlightbookstore.com.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to tonight's live online author event with Greenlight Bookstore. I'm Jessica from Greenlight, and we are thrilled to host tonight's event with Mahogany L. Brown presenting her new book, Chlorine Sky. She's joined by special guests Renee Watson and Ellen Hagen, so you are in for an excellent time tonight. Before we start, I just want to say a huge thanks to Mahogany, to Renee and Ellen, and the team at Crown Books for Young Readers for making this happen, and for all of you for showing up. Though we're not able to host events in our store spaces right now, our community of authors and readers is still here, and we are so grateful for your support and for the chance to make space for conversation and connection. We're going to be pulling questions only from the Q&A to be answered in the later part of the program. We are recording tonight's event, so look for audio or video versions on our social media channels later on. And importantly, tonight's featured book, Chlorine Sky, as well as books by all of the authors tonight, is available for sale at Greenlight Bookstore. You can shop in person at our bookstore locations, 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. every day of the week, and you can purchase Mahogany's book and many others on site, or order online at greenlightbookstore.com for a quick pickup at the store or for shipping anywhere in the U.S. And even better, we have a limited number of signed copies of Chlorine Sky available. So make sure to note in the order comments field when you check out if you'd like a signed copy. And we're happy to fulfill those requests while supplies last. So if you care about supporting the careers of authors and the ongoing existence of independent bookstores, buying tonight's featured book is a great way to show your support. Okay, some introductions. Our opening speakers tonight are Renee Watson and Ellen Hagen. Renee is a New York Times bestselling author. Her young adult novel, Piecing Me Together, received a Coretta Scott King Award and a Newbery Honor, and her children's picture books and novels for teens have received many awards and international recognition. Her poetry and fiction centers around the experiences of Black girls and women and explores themes of home, identity, and intersections of race, class, and gender. Her new novel, Love is a Revolution, is going to be published next week, so you will be getting a sneak peek of that tonight. Ellen Hagen is a writer, performer, and educator. She co-authored the amazing YA novel Watch Us Rise with Renee Watson, and her forthcoming books include the poetry collection Blooming and the middle grade novel in verse Reckless Glorious Girl, which she's going to be reading from tonight. She's the director of the poetry and theater departments in the Dreamyard Project and co-leads the Alice Hoffman Young Writers Retreat at Adelphi University. A proud Kentucky writer, Ellen is a member of the Afro-Latian Poets, Conjure Women, and the co-founder of the Girl Story Collective. So Renee and Ellen are going to be opening for our featured author, Mahogany L. Brown. She's a writer, organizer, and educator with roles including executive director of Bowery Poetry Club, artistic director of Urban Word NYC, and poetry coordinator of St. Francis College. She's the author previously of the books Woke, A Young Poet's Call to Justice, Black Girl Magic, and several collections of poetry for adults. She's also the founder of the Woke Baby Book Fair, a national diversity literature campaign, and as an Arts for Justice grantee, is completing her first book of essays on mass incarceration, investigating its impact on women and children. Her new young adult book, Chlorine Sky, is a novel in verse about broken promises, fast rumors, and when growing up means growing apart from your best friend. Chlorine Sky is about love and loss, a friendship gone awry, femme power, basketball swag, and tomboy antics. And it's about what it means to not only lose a friend, but how in filling that void, you might find yourself. So Ellen and then Renee are going to start us off with the opening readings, and then Mahogany will read from Chlorine Sky, and then she'll be talking with Renee and Ellen and with all of you. So to start us off tonight, Ellen, please take it away.
Thank you. Thank you. It is a joy and honor to be here with you all celebrating Mahogany L. Brown and Chlorine Sky with Renee Watson. It feels already energized. And also just want to say quickly about Mahogany. I've known you for such a long time and seeing the way that you gather community and gather young people and older people and just organize and create space for all of us. And so it feels so lucky to be here to celebrate and honor you tonight. I'm going to read from this book. I just got I just got one copy, it's not out yet, but I'll be reading from Reckless Glorious Girl. It's about Beatrice Miller. She's a seventh grader on the verge of everything. She's trying to figure out who she is. She lives with her mom and her mama, and she is trying to figure out how to be cool and what that means. So I'll read a little excerpt from that. Beatrice Miller's burning questions. Will mom and mama ever see me as more than a little kid? Will they ever trust me, recognize my growing, see my evolution, witness my expansion? I've been studying other words for mature in our big old thesaurus, and they include evolve, develop, blossom, ripen, arrive. So my question is, will those words ever happen to me? How can I celebrate all the parts of me? Comic book nerd, garden and movie lover, bike rider, swim teamer, nacho eater, mama and mom hugger, late night couch cuddler. Should I shine a light on all the parts of me that no one can see? Nervous, anxious, embarrassed, awkward. Maybe if I could share those feelings, then people would see more of the real me. And then, will Mariella, Stacey Ann, and I ever be officially cool? Not outskirts, outside, sideline cool, but ruling the school, making all the jokes, getting all the laughs, full lunch table friends finding us after the bell rings. You know, that kind of cool. The kind that's smooth, enters the room before you do. Anyway, I've got about a trillion more, but you have to start somewhere. Beatrice. Maybe my parents could have chosen a name not like a granny. Less grandma, more teenage. Less arthritic, more athletic. Less geriatric, more youngish. Less old folks home, more spring break. Less ancient, more modern, you get the idea. The fact that it really is my mama's name doesn't make it any better. Fact is, it makes it worse. Because I love my mama more than the ocean or French toast or sleeping in or bacon. And when I don't spend all my time hating it, my name becomes a beacon, some light to hang on to when it's too dark to see myself. Some nights, Mariella and Stacey Ann show up and out, bring loads of cheese puffs and soda, stash it quiet in my bedroom, late night craving fixes. Mama makes dinner out of fried okra, rice so full of salt and butter our mouths celebrate. Vegan hot dogs sizzling on the grill. It's all about balance, she says. Grins before turning in for the TV and her crossword puzzles. The backyard is ours. We collect mason jars with tops, go exploring to catch fireflies fast in our palms, swatting high fives as they glow and shine, their wings wide in our hands. Look, look, we all holler. Name them, see who can catch the most. Stacey Ann wins this time, counting their light. They glitter through our grip, our faces full of sweat. We laugh while letting go. Their small bodies look like fireworks flying from our fingers. What other people see versus what I see. To other people, Kentucky equals country, equals hillbilly, backwoods, uneducated, misunderstood. But to me, Kentucky equals home, family, a garden in bloom, everyone who matters, my whole life story. They see empty roads where I see rolling hills. They see small towns where I see everyone I know and who knows me too. They see small minds where I see big old hearts and brilliance. On the news, I hear poverty and underprivileged, but in my home, I see a table full of fresh food from our garden and beds made with quilts from my great-great-granny's two hands. To me, a Kentucky sky is full of stars and shine, smells of woods and fresh earth. Thankful the people who have raised me up have taught me to love where I'm from. Country folk. Mama says people all the time underestimate the South. Think we're rowdy, unruly, and messy, backward, dirty, and unkempt. Think we don't know nothing. Imagine us barefoot, dirt roads, stupid, uneducated, the opposite of sophisticated. Can't invite us anywhere. She laughs in downward dog, her long silver strands trailing behind, mixes her homemade kombucha and cracks the spine of her newest cookbook, open to sourdough bread, braided, twisted goodness. I might be country, but I'm worldly too, she says, pointing at our map, rising up like a wave behind her. Even if I haven't traveled the globe, I've been there in my books and newspapers and stories and tall tales tell it. I've known this whole wide world better than most. And I sure know not to poke fun at someone for the way they draw, where they lay their head, or the soil they plant their dreams in. Germinate and burgeon. To germinate is to shoot forth, straight up from the ground, rise into existence, exist, begin. Develop from seed or spore, from bulb to plant, from kid to girl to young woman. Develop. To burgeon is to bud, quick with flourish, sprout and arrive. Too bad I don't feel like either of those words. Still growing, still trying to figure out how to take up space and show off. Instead, I'm still somewhere underground, beneath it all, watching everyone else push up and grow, rising up all around me. How I'd love to be Beatrice Miller, queen of the amplify, expansion even. Tell Mama to watch out for me and my reckless blossoming. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. I am so, so honored to be a part of tonight. I love both of these women. I admire and respect them. I feel so blessed to work alongside authors who care about our young people and who are doing such good work in the classroom and bringing poetry into schools and inspiring young women to raise their voices. So it's an honor to read alongside both you, Mahogany, and Ellen tonight. Congratulations. Welcome to the YA world. I'm so excited about you having a novel out, a novel in verse, and I cannot wait to see what else comes from you and this long, long, long career you are going to have with many books for our young people. I'm going to read from Love is a Revolution, which is this book right here. It comes out next Tuesday, actually. And I'm going to read a short scene. It's about a girl who falls for a guy who's an activist, and she is not. So she pretends to be one to get his love and attention, and in the process realizes she really needs to love herself before she can love anyone else. So this is the scene where she meets him. The lights dim even more, and once it is completely blacked out, there is cheering and clapping. The stage lights are too dark at first, so I can't really see the person talking. Good evening, everyone. We are here to remember Harlem, to honor Harlem, to critique Harlem, to love Harlem. We are here tonight to inspire Harlem. There are shouts and whistles and so much clapping. Then finally, the lights rise, and I see him. My name is Ty Brown, and I will be your host for the evening. While everyone is still clapping, he says, tonight's going to be a special night. And then, I swear, he looks at me and says, sit back and enjoy. I almost yell out, oh, I will. But I keep it together and settle into my seat. I whisper to Imani, who is he? I've never seen him before. Ty, he's new, she says. I turn to Sadie and whisper, I mean, if I had known guys like that were a part of this activist group, maybe I would have joined a long time ago. Ty smiles, the most gorgeous smile I have ever seen, and says, let's begin. I don't believe in love at first sight. I don't even believe that there is a such thing as a soulmate or one true love. But right now, in this moment, I am ready to profess my love for Ty Brown. Okay, fine. I don't really love him. I don't know him yet, but there are some things I know about him in just the first 30 minutes of this open mic, and these are the things I love. Three things I love about Ty Brown. One, I love his dark skin, the way his white shirt contrasts against his deep brown complexion. I love his style, how his shirt has the letters B-L-A-C-K across his chest, making him a living poem. Two, I love the way his deep voice bellows out, filling up the space, how his voice is electric shockwaves when he needs to amp up the crowd, how it is a warm hug when he needs to welcome each person to the stage. Three, I love that when the fourth person gets choked up with tears because he can't remember the lyrics to his rap, Ty comes from backstage and stands next to him, putting his hand on his shoulder. I love how they just stand there for a whole minute and the audience is silent and Ty asks, do you want to start over? I love how Ty stands there while the boy performs, never leaving his side, bobbing his head and moving to the beat. Yeah, those are the things I love about Ty. It was definitely worth coming out in the rain tonight. So that's her first little glimpse of Ty. And over the story, she's doing all kinds of things to get him to love her. And she's changing who she is. And she comes to the realization that she really needs to work on herself. And some of how she comes to that realization is through songs by a fake artist in the book named Blue. So the song lyrics are in the book. And I'm going to read one of the songs for you. Blue playlist, track 13. All I need. Today, I am possible. I have survived and will survive, and all that is coming is already mine. Not waiting on someone to want me, need me, no fairy tale dreams of what my life might be. I love me right now. Right now, I love me. And even with my flaws, I am enough. And I have failed, but I am not a failure. And love is patient, and love is kind, and love is not just for me to give away. Keep some for myself. Not waiting on someone to want me, need me, no fairy tale dreams of what my life might be. I love me right now. Right now, I love me. Today, I am possible. I have survived and will survive, and all that is coming is already mine. Today, I am my own revolution. Thank you. So this is from Watch Us Rise, and this is This Body. My body is perfect and imperfect and black and girl and big and thick hair and short legs and scraped knee and healed scar and heart beating and hands that hold and voice that bellows and feet that dance and arms that embrace and my mama's eyes and my daddy's smile and my grandpa's hope. And my body is masterpiece, and my body is mine.
Yay.
All right, well, I'm gonna jump in after my drills. Laylee and I both sit in the shade on the front lawn of the neighborhood candy house. Miss Irene got white hair and a permanent scowl. She got white hair, a little white lap dog, and wear a dusty muumuu. She smokes cigarettes, the white stick hanging from the cliff of her lip like a daredevil. Miss Irene say she ain't got time for us kids and don't let nobody curse on her front yard. But she got a Costco card and charge pennies on the dollar for our favorite sweets. We get a dollar worth of candy in a plastic sandwich bag that we share. After my basketball drills, I walk around the barbed gate of the neighborhood pool. I climb into the blue-green water and float for days. Really, I only got an hour before the pool closes, but I don't care when I'm floating. It lets me think. My eyes closed are searching the sky for animal figures, ice cream cones, and airplanes that skip across the blue, blue up. The aqua water carry my arms and legs, a body of girl and whoosh. When I'm too tired to move my calves and arms, I climb out the water and feel less rubber band and more light. Most days the water burns everything, my nose and eyes, and even my hair is too dry, but I feel clean. I feel more me than when I arrived. Laylee meets me after the pool. She ain't get in the pool, but she still wears her tube top bikini, a towel draped around her shoulder like a comma. She bites at her cuticles and I already know. It's been almost 2 years since silly boys slapped water in the pool. Now the boys are gone and it's just me doing floating like a log while mommy and me classes happen in the shallow end. My muscles hurt after playing horse alone. A girl on the basketball court ain't no different than another baller, any other baller, if you work hard enough. That's what my cousin Inga say. She the first one to teach me to hold the globe with both hands, to use my right hand to guide the ball. Finally, out of the pool, I can see the harsh water peeling my skin. I don't have any cocoa butter on me, so I pull my legs up crisscross applesauce and focus on Laylee. When she bites her nails, it's not because she's nervous. More like anxious and angry. And it's always about her mama. So what happened, I ask. And she frowns at her hands, then covers her face from the dipping sun. She shrugs and instantly I feel bad. I know what it feels like to have too much to say, so much you can't speak. I make noise when I'm nosy. I slap the mosquitoes gnawing at my legs. It's been a year since we last talked about her mama, but that's the only thing that bothers her enough to bite, ruin her perfect nails. But lately, don't sweat it. She don't swing at the mosquitoes. She don't even miss a beat. That woman been gone so long, I can barely remember what she looks like. I can't imagine what it's like to forget my mother's face. I sit quiet and wait for her story to unfold. My mama's still on drugs and my daddy ain't got time for all that. He don't want us girls to see her like that. He says every child deserved to be the sun, to know they come from the sun. And if the sun snuff itself to dusk before its time and no shine is left to see, let it be. One day we woke up and she was already a cloudy shadow of herself. Then one day we woke up and she was gone. She only come home when she clean. She only called home when she sort of sober. She ain't never remember my birthday or my sister's birthday. And I'm like, whatever. When you live where we live, you say what it is. And if you can't say what it is, or if it hurt too much, or maybe it's too confusing, you just say, whatever. That way, you ain't no lie. Don't nobody want to call it, especially when it got more faces than any solitary name. But if I'm honest, I want to know if Laylee's seen the zombies too. The ones who take over our uncle's bodies after weeks of playing ghost, only to return him to our front door with his clothes all crumpled and eyes brimming red. Laylee is the only one I talk about. Laylee is the only one I can talk to about it. The smell of hot ash and burned glass. You know what it looks like? She stands up from the grass, swinging her dry stripped towel in the air. It looks like the Walking Dead. On the way to my house, I need to rinse the chlorine off my skin. I need to remember who I am. Laylee say, where's your cocoa butter? And I know she wants to call me Ashy. When I walk through the front door, I'm surprised no one is home. I turn on the television and tell Laylee I'll be right back. Right out the blue, Laylee calls to me already running up the stairs. I'm just tired of crying over someone that's been gone so long. Laylee laughs, like the joke's on everybody but her. Laylee squints into the mirror and pouts. Laylee applies more lipstick than a little. Laylee takes my lip gloss as backup just in case. Laylee says, it's so boring here, let's call Sean. I laugh like the joke is on Sean. He's her old crush and first real boyfriend since her mama left the house. But then I realize she just called my house boring. And now my feelings are hurt. Laylee say, don't be like that. I ain't mean nothing by it. Laylee pull my ponytail a little. Laylee is forgiven again. And I'm gonna just jump around a bit so you can get to see the life of Laylee and the protagonist whose name is a secret unless, of course, you read it. I ain't never been good at lying. To Laylee, I say, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to, but I ain't never been a good liar. Mama told me so. She say, you got a way of repeating back a question until it sounds old and worn, like shoes with bad soles, and no one can believe a story with all them pauses. Anyways, like I was saying, I walk in the gym with Clifton. He two steps behind me, all lanky and lean. He make me feel pretty. He see me in a way I never thought I wanted eyes to see me before. He looks at me like the boys look at Laylee, so I thought she'd understand when Clifton and I walked in together. Cheerleaders strut by in their orange and green outfits. The tassels and orange pom-poms are small and flurry globes and bounce like sparklers to anyone with enough patience to look closely. This is the part where Clifton looked at me real close. I stop walking, my mouth wide open, and he says, your eyes are like diamonds. And I want to smile. But I know bad game when I hear it, especially when the entire fourth grade in Mrs. Meek's class worked these same tired similes. The thing is, Clifton said it to me, and he don't know what I worked on during fourth grade English or how I walked the halls and everyone make fun of me. The thing about bullies is they only notice that people don't fight back. They take your kindness for weakness, but I'm not weak. I'm just tired of swinging. When kids have a different daddy than their siblings, it's hard to remember what comes first, the heart hurt or the stomach growl. Issa got a different daddy. He's okay, not mean like her, but my daddy is a ghost. Mama say, some people can't stay out of jail. Issa say, he ain't never want you. Her nails click in the air like they close in a casket. Cousin Inga say, Issa just jealous, but I know hate when I see it. After fourth grade, I learned you think you so smart is a threat. In high school, without no daddy to show me how to dribble or pivot, with a sister who act like she hate me and a cousin who more sister than cousin, I figure I'm safer if I stay away from light. Ain't no daddy to say move right, right, left. Mama work for everyone so I don't hold my breath, just stay away from the spotlight. The light gets too hot for brown girls like me to feel safe. This is when I learned to play not as smart. This is when I learned to keep my hands in my lap during Mr. Wacoby's class. This is when I learned to not run as fast. This is when I stopped beating the boys and running at kickball, at tetherball, at t-ball. This is how I learned to play not as big, because nobody got time for a girl outshining them. My cousin Inga says, who you playing small for? And I pretend I don't know what she's talking about. She's 5'11" and the tallest woman in our family. She's a basketball coach for the little kid league during summer. And after she saw I had handles in fourth grade, she ain't let me drop the rock since. Who you playing small for means I don't get to slink into the corner. I don't get to find a home in the shadow, not when there is a court nearby. Inga attends Downtown Community College and talks to Issa almost every day. But sometimes it's like they don't even like each other. When Issa and Inga's arguments get too big and Issa screams into the phone, then it's week before I see Inga again. I'll come home from the pool and she'll be on the porch or sitting on the hood of her mama's car, waiting for Issa to come home from her classes at State. She'll shrug when I say, where you been? And then say, I love her, but I don't like her. Most times I think if we weren't related, we wouldn't be around each other at all. When she's at the house, we go straight to the court. She makes me play her one-on-one. She hits the ball out of my hand if I'm sloppy. She kicks at my feet planted and shakes her head. Play D, Lil. What did I teach you? Inga calling me Lil tells me I'm someone's sister. Inga calling me Lil shows me I'm not out here on my own and everything I do means something to someone else. And just like that, I begin to play for keeps. On the court, there is no mercy. I'm a baller. And I don't care who is bothered by all the space I take up. Thank you. Oh, boy. So we're going to all come back to the stage. Renee,
you're
Ellen.
All good. It's all good. That was a fantastic reading. So
I know.
It's all good. We family.
Y'all are good people.
I keep wanting to tell everybody, come off mute. Make some noise.
I know.
I do miss the in-person readings. Right? I know. My goodness. So I'll start off my questions. Oh, hi, Jean Amberlee is here. Yay, friend. My question for y'all, because I had a tough time writing this novel in verse, and oh my gosh, this is like really draft 7 by the time you get it together, right? Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, how was that process for you?
With our book, with Watch Us Rise, writing together?
No, your new books, both of y'all are writing verse, poetry. What is it like to write with poetry in mind, but having to keep that novel, that arc in the forefront?
I can start, Renee.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I just want to give a shout out to Renee Watson, because I say this a lot, but to write Watch Us Rise with Renee, I'll start there, was like taking a class with, my MFA is in fiction, but it had been so long, and to write and craft a story, we kept going back to outlines or really timelining what happened, and then scenes, and then each chapter is what happens so we can get to the next thing. And those lessons stayed with me for Reckless Glorious Girl. And I'm working on something now, and I keep being like, I said this a lot, like, what would Renee do at this moment? Or if I get stuck, I'll be like, and sometimes I'll just text her and be like, what would you do right now? But I feel like that's what I'm doing a lot, is watching what my peers, the people I love, how you all are writing, you know, and sort of studying how it's going. I read so much now, and Renee talks about this too, but to follow what is the timeline in the story that I love. Like if it's a story I really am into, what makes me want to turn the page, and then tracking that a little bit so I can do the same thing. So I don't know. I feel like I'm trying to learn. Each book feels like a whole new learning experience. Yeah.
I think each book is definitely different. In Love is a Revolution, it is mostly the more traditional novel as far as like chapter lengths and things like that. There are a couple of songs like the one I read, and she makes a lot of lists. And that, I guess, was the poet in me just wanting to, I always want to push against the boundaries of what fiction can be and have like a collage of writing. I'm always just thinking about how would this character say what they need to say? And so that's how I come up with, is if I'm going to write, like for Nala, she's a thinker and a planner. So she makes a lot of to-do lists, and she makes lists of what she's thinking and how she feels. So they kind of read like poems throughout the book. And I guess I'm always trying to anchor each poem or even my paragraphs are very short and concise because I'm a poet first. And I think I learned from poetry to get to the point, get to the heart of the thing quickly. So poetry has inspired my fiction a lot. And I try to just follow what the character needs and wants and what is in their way of getting what they need and what they want, and making that the thread that goes to the story. But as far as if I'm choosing to write, you know, longer or shorter, it just depends on the voice and the personality of the character.
But I totally want to take that workshop. So
we can be on the text thread of just like supporting each other. You know, writing is hard. It's just hard. I don't care what kind of writing you do. Yeah. It is hard and it takes a lot of work. And I always say this when I'm teaching and I have to remind myself, you know, the first draft is so messy and I just want to get through it. So then I can really do the writing. Like I feel like my first drafts, it's just getting the story out. It's just me getting to know my character, getting to know some of the things they're going to go through. And once I get that out, then I can go back and really be a writer. The first drafts, I'm being a storyteller. I'm telling a good story. But then I got to go back and do revision. And that's when I feel like I'm being a writer.
Yeah. I was going to say that, you know, sometimes the loneliness can feel a little bit like I'm just at my computer by myself again, and oh, I'm going to face it. If it's not working, if it's going well, then I'm really happy to be with myself. But if it's not, then it can be frustrating. And I was thinking about knowing you all and knowing how you make community, both of you all, but how you sustain community. And that there's, you know, knowing your work, there's all these beautiful friendships that you paint and create in your books. Can you all talk about how friendships and community sustain your work as an artist, either how it did when you were a young person or didn't, you know, and how it sustains you or builds you now as an artist?
I love that question. Thank you. I'll focus on now. I think the friendships have been vital for me, even feeling like I had the potential, but also like the follow through to do it, and that it wouldn't be whack. Because the first thing I think is, as a poet, which I've been practicing for 20 years, I know how to get into a poem and to get out of the poem, right? I know that dismount well, because slam, it requires you to hone that craft. You have to keep that audience engaged. In the performance poetry, same thing. And then when you're teaching, same thing. And this new world, I didn't have the same parameters. So it was the friend group, right? It was me tapping in with Jason Reynolds and me like, bruh, this is not working. You said, do this thing. And now I'm sad all the time. I don't understand, right? It was Renee picking up the galley, knowing it was probably trashy, but picking it up and sending a picture and being like, I love what you're doing. Like, you don't know what that did. I wept that day, Renee, okay? I was crying because I hated it. I did not like it. And it wasn't that I didn't like the story, but I could see the holes. Mm-hmm. And I knew that only the people who knew me would love it. Does that make sense? Like, I didn't know how it was going to stand without me. And talking to Nick Stone, being like, yo, just keep going. It's okay. So like having those people who were a part of that world say you're on the right track, extremely helpful. So if you don't have a core group of folks, get one. Yeah. And of course, I then had, you know, poets who are full-time poets and facilitators that I was able to send drafts to. And some are journalists, and they were able to like help me nail down some things. But I mean, without my community, I do not think this would have been feasible. And what about you, Renee?
I the same. I mean, I think that you have to find your people, and you have to, especially in the early stages of your work, only share it with people who you trust. And you trust that they are going to tell you the truth, but tell you the truth in love. They're going to be gentle because you're fragile. You're creating something that's very vulnerable. You're putting your work out into the world, and you need that honest feedback, but you also need someone who's not going to tear you down, right? So, I always tell even young people who are thinking about, you know, writing communities and what should they be doing? How do I become a writer? That's always my advice. Find a few people. You don't need a lot. Two or three folks that you can lean on and trust, and you know that they're going to have your back, and you know that they're going to understand when you can't kick it and you can't do some of the other things you want to do that you do with friends because you're working on a project. It's fortunate for me that I have so many creative friends because we can spend time together while we're creating. And that's been a good support that we can just get to, especially when we could gather in person. I figured out how to do it virtually now, but get together, I put my headphones on and I'm doing my work. Ellen's doing her work, but we're together, you know? And there was something about creating, even when working on separate pieces, just having someone there to keep me accountable to make sure I'm getting words on the page was helpful too. So I need my people, especially in this industry, when you just need to vent and cry and have some cheerleaders. That's really important. Mm. I'm thinking about us as young people. You know, it's so interesting. And all of us have taught and are teaching and working with young people. So I was wanting to ask, who were you when you were the age of your protagonist? Like, what were you like at that age? And is that little girl surprised at what's happening for you right now? Or is this what you knew you would be doing?
Mm. You want to go, Ellen?
Sure. That's such a, I feel like I had a flashback and I didn't want to go there for a second. I was like, oh, poor kid. I think I will say this, every book I write, I feel like there's a little thread of who I am and who I was. Certainly it's fiction, but there's a thread. I'll tell a very quick story. The book was written inspired by this moment. I worked for DreamYard. I was in a class of seventh graders. Vincent Toro, who's a great poet, was teaching Pablo Neruda's Book of Questions to seventh graders. And he was like, ask any question you want, any question. And I kept, I was sitting at a group of table of kids, and you know, they were being very shy, and some were asking like, when will I go visit, travel around the world? And then some were like, when am I going to get a boyfriend? Or when am I going to get a girlfriend? When am I going to find love? You know, some were so tender and some were so far reaching. And I remember thinking in seventh grade, I was that too. I remember I was not quite, you know, I was good friends with a couple kids who we were kind of like on the outskirts in sixth and seventh grade. We didn't stay there, but I could see where I wanted to be in the cool group. But I didn't know exactly why. And I was struggling to figure out where I belonged, but I knew that poetry, even though I didn't know what poetry meant necessarily, but I knew I loved to journal and I loved to write my feelings. And it felt like writing already was a safe place for me. So that, I don't know if that's like my protagonist now, but I do remember feeling like I was searching for how to become the full me. And I feel like that's, Beatrice is absolutely on that same journey to figure out who she is. Yeah.
It's funny because, I put up a picture of me and my high school best friend. Her name, she presents herself in the book as Kiana, as the person who comes in and reminds the protagonist that friendships don't have to be frenemies, right? It doesn't have to be a fight for someone just to see you and be like, what's up, sis? Like, you can have an easy friendship and someone want good for you and that be enough. And when she read it, she was like, is this us? And I was like, no, it's not us, right? It's all of the ladies, because at some point, I believe I was a lately, right? I think that all of us have a moment when there's someone that we stay friends with or we're cool with, and we see them vulnerable or needing something, and we not give it to them. And we don't know exactly why we aren't giving it to them, right? In that moment, it could just be a selfishness. It could be their own, you know, suffering. So in this collection, I was pulling from all of these moments that I had or watched or witnessed as a young person coming up. And I had to stuff it into this one story. But it's a trip because I definitely dealt with colorism, but when I'm talking about it to my friend, she was like, people loved you. What are you talking about, Mo? Like, that's not true. And I was like, girl, do you know what people used to say to me? And I would tell her the story now. Like, we just had this conversation recently after the book came out. And she said, I had no idea. And I was like, I know, because I didn't want to keep reliving it and telling that story. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it was like, well, maybe it was, did I do something wrong? Right. And so we start looking at the ways who we are now and like, what did we do then? Like, how was I complicit? Mm-hmm. And I just had, that's a whole nother story that's going to have to be written, because I was like, you were an amazing friend. Like you showed me that I deserved the love and that I was good enough. Like a lot of her characteristics show up in, you know, Cousin Inga. My brother has a lot of characteristics that I had to put into Cousin Inga because those are some things that he told me. So yeah, it's trippy because all of those things, I think, kind of permeate the text in some way, shape, or form. It's not just one instance or one childhood memory. It's like, you know, the amalgamation of them all.
Yeah. We have some questions in the Q&A. Should we go to those?
Let's do it. What's question number one from Hadel? Hi, Hadel.
Hadel, hi.
I don't know you, but they do, so now I know you. We friends.
Hadel is a poet and is an amazing, amazing woman. Woman now. She's a former student of mine. So, you know, in my head, I keep thinking of her as a student, and she is not. She's grown. Okay.
So Hadel asks, what rituals, tools, hacks do you practice when you are feeling stuck or like you are not writing your true authentic story? What advice would you give a young writer who is still developing their voice? Okay. I would say my favorite hack is to write poems of like what I do a lot of like people watching, as I'm sure most writers do. Right. We're always building some kind of lexicon of a people for the books. And when I people watch, I'm just observing. And if I just write what I see, the poem happens in just writing what I see. If I don't have the opportunity to do so because COVID is a real thing, I take to the Twitter and I start tweeting. The tweets are poems, right? I look at newspaper clippings. And I think the best thing about this last couple of years, while we have been basically tortured, we had so much fiction to write from in these news headlines. It was like, that's not true. I'm gonna write the truth now. So like that was a writing prompt for a very long time. How about y'all?
Yeah, I make a lot of lists. I ask questions that feel maybe questions I can't ever answer. They're so big that then it inspires me to start digging and I find something to write about. I also go on walks and sometimes take a break from writing. I think it's okay to take a break from writing. And sometimes we're stuck because we're trying to write instead of just like letting ourselves write. And I think there's a different space for me that I'm in when I feel like I am trying to tell this story. I need to write this right now versus I'm going to write and we're going to see what happens and I'm just going to let it flow. It's a whole different mindset. And sometimes to get in that easier mindset, I need to go on a walk or listen to a song or pray or like get the stress out that I'm bringing to the page, because that's what's making me stuck. I'm bringing all this junk and stuff and things I haven't worked out in my mind. And sometimes I have to just clear my head. So yeah, making lists, answering big questions and taking a break is sometimes what refuels me to go back to the work.
Yeah, similar. I do try to, I journal a lot. So I try not to let, the free writing feels like I don't need it to make any sense. It could be about anything. It could be just like exercises. I feel like all of it is working the muscle of being a writer, and some of it, and a lot of it's not going to find any place. But some one or two lines might, like the practice mm-hmm. of sort of mindful writing and just getting things on the page. I also try to turn my phone to airplane mode. This is a big one for me. And then set 25 minute time. I do this. It's called the Pomodoro method. And you're supposed to do 2 25-minute sets, and then you take a little longer break and then do 2 more. I don't do it as ritualized as that, but I do try to do those 25 minutes without doing anything else. Don't check Twitter. Don't check Instagram. Don't check my email. Email is a bad, you got to not get onto the email.
So bad.
And the last one is I try to, and I don't do this that much, but I've really tried to wake up at around 6:30 before my kids wake up. And so that I learned this from Nikki Finney and Crystal Wilkinson, who used to be, they would wake up at 4:30, 5 a.m. And they were like, you have that quiet writer mind and nothing has gotten in your head yet. So you just are on the page or at fresh. I've not gotten up that early, but I believe that's true. Like, I feel like if I let other things enter, then I'm not in the world of the fiction. Like, I'd like to be in that dream space where, and it doesn't always happen, but I think the more I try to do it, like you're working a muscle, the more it's muscle memory. And you're like, oh, okay, I'm up. I'm dream space. You know, I think that's true.
Yeah. That's so interesting. I do realize that my poetry writing and this new YA world writing are different models completely. When I am doing the YA, when I'm finishing the project, I'm working off of Christine O'Keefe afterwards introduced me to write 45 minutes, take a 15 minute break. And you do like, that's your day. Like however many sets you want to do, do that. And I was able to finish. That's why I was able to finish that second book. So the second book to Chlorine Sky is done. Turn her in. Hey. So, and it was because I was doing that method. But when I'm doing poetry, when I'm writing poetry specific, which is it feels more like a bloodletting. I am meditating. I do a sound bowl now. I have meditation every day. I have a little app. And that has... And it's probably, I mean, it's obviously is serving this YA work, but it's doing something different for that poetry muscle for me, which is mm-hmm. just allowing me to not write from a space of anger and rage as much. Whereas the novel, I feel like I have a purpose. This is the theme I'm tackling. And so because I'm writing from fiction, I can, you know, pull from whatever I need. But the poetry, that's a whole different, you know, word bank. Mm-hmm. But Shine, the meditation app, it is, I know it's woman owned, but I'm almost certain it is woman of color owned and run. Mm. It is the best. I'm sending y'all gift subscriptions. Got some more questions and we have a little bit of time, 6 minutes left. All right.
I see a question up here. I'll say this one out from Sonia Adams. The female protagonists in all of your novels come to voice through awareness of self and the world in which they occupy. How do you envision your YA novels to speak to this current moment in society?
Well, I would say that I wrote the book because I remember there not being a book that centered a Black girl dealing with being ignored and felt small in this way. I found myself because of Bluest Eye. And I remember being like, oh, I wish I could talk about, you know, how I played sports and then how I couldn't play sports because then that meant that I wasn't the girl people wanted to date. And then I had to play dumb so that these people would like me too. And I remember just having this wrestling moment and not being able to find the literature to articulate it. So I think now in this era of, you know, this resurgence of Black Girl Magic, because it's really been here, but like now we have a new hashtag name for it. There are these young people who are just like, how do I show up for myself? And so many of us, even still as adults, we determine who we are because of the friends we have. And when those friendships go away or, you know, are fractured, then we think that there's something wrong with us. And so what does it mean to define who you are despite the friendships that you have or can keep? And I thought it would really responded to that moment. Mm. What about you, Renee?
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about what it means for, especially for Black girls to love themselves. And not really wait to be validated by anybody else. So there's so much in Love is a Revolution that it is the love story and her and the guy and all of that, but it's also her realizing I'm enough by myself and I don't have to date someone or my mother doesn't have to be the perfect mom for me. She's in all these complicated and different types of love relationships. And she's figuring out that really it comes down to what she thinks about herself. And I think that that is a radical thing right now in a world that is constantly reminding Black girls that they are, that their lives don't matter. Right. Mm. And so I was thinking about how can I have a lot of joy in this book? And we can celebrate just everyday Black living and not so much the struggle and the pain of Blackness, but celebrate who we are, who young girls are, and have them love each other and work on their own self-love. So, yeah, that's how I was thinking about addressing what's going on right now. Not so on the nose with the Black Lives Matter protests that were happening this summer, but more about the bigger picture of Blackness and hoping that young girls and all of our young people, that they are remembering and understanding that they really do matter. And in small and big ways that they can show up in this world and do something that matters, right? So she's learning that activism doesn't have to be standing at the mic, making the big speech, but she can show love to people that are her neighbors and to the people who live in her house. And that's how she's figuring out how to be change in the world is by being it in her world.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think I'm trying to write, you know, young characters who are whole and complex and nuanced and that they get to be all the things that real people are, you know, that they're struggling to figure out how to love themselves. I think Beatrice is figuring out how to, you know, how her mama who lives in the house, how to love her, even though she's complicated, and her mom, and how to sort of have that multi-generational tie in her family and figure out who she is with them and without them. I think young people, Renee and I always talk about this with Watch Us Rise. We were seeing so many young people rising up in so many ways in classrooms. Hadel, who's in the, you know, people who were in, we were learning as much from them as we hope they were learning from us. And the power of that voice to then fight against racism and sexism and with art too, with using art, that art could be a vehicle for all of these. You know, I feel like I'm hoping that the protagonists in my book are figuring out how to be who themselves and figuring out how those strong friendships can help them rise up. I'm often thinking about how does your community act like a wave in your life? And so you just keep rising to what happens next. We're in this together and you just keep gathering and figuring out what do we need to fight for and how do we want the world to exist, you know?
Thank y'all so much. I'm just happy Chlorine Sky gets to live amongst the beauty that you create. Thank y'all for sharing this space with me. We're going to meditate and bring Jessica back to the stage.
Yes. It's such a privilege to be in the virtual room with you guys. I feel like I've learned some stuff. I'm downloading some new apps. Folks want to get a copy of Chlorine Sky. We do have some signed copies, which Woo-hoo. Is awesome. Just make sure you ask for one when you check out. And you can pre-order Ellen and Renee's book right there on that page too. So support all of these great authors and their beautiful work. So thank you guys again for being here tonight. And thanks to everybody for joining us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Greenlight Bookstore podcast. We're grateful to our production partners at Libro FM for working with us to produce the quarantine season. Libro FM provides access to thousands of digital audiobooks through partnerships with independent bookstores nationwide. You can purchase Libro FM audiobooks at greenlightbookstore.com. You can subscribe to the Greenlight Bookstore podcast on iTunes, download it as a free audiobook from Libro FM, or stream it on greenlightbookstore.com/podcast. On the Greenlight website, you can also find links to purchase the books discussed in this episode and many more, as well as information about Greenlight's store locations and shopping hours. The best way to support your local independent bookstore and the literary communities we serve is as simple as buying a book.